And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. Today on the show is adoption.
The CSS Adoption Agency will be joining us live.
I'm Kiki's.
Mitch will be finding out a little bit more about them for us.
All coming today.
Right here on Shout Out. Hello, one and all.
Hello.
Hello, Tara.
Hello, I am on the new
good
side.
Good evening, you are on the new side. What's the studio look like from that angle?
Very different.
Well, it does. It looks less sexy, I think. I've got my back to the carpet. There's a lot of redecorating going on in the studio.
In a studio that has carpet on the walls, you can't really have your back to the carpet without also having your front
the
and
carpet,
your sides.
There's piles
and your
of carpet in the corner.
Oh, that's for Studio 2.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Okay.
I just see all the whizzy things, all these dials and things and monitors, and I just watch Andy doing his thing.
Yes, it's good that he knows what he's doing.
He does, doesn't he?
Now, BCFM listeners, apologies. The new satellite seems to be having a little bit of a bad day,
probably
I think.
The
I don't know whether it's the weather or not, but it didn't sound very good, so I just switched to playing a song. Yeah.
Those of you who lose your television signal, if you've got Sky when it's really bad weather, will know what that's about.
This is why I have cable.
Yes.
Even cable gets water in it. Even that happens, I know.
Really?
Yeah, my Virgin, I had to go and wrap it up myself.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I had to do it myself.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening.
So if your cable gets flooded, just call Tara.
That's all right.
I'm not Mr. Branson.
Well, poor Mr. Branson, I think, lost his island, didn't he, in the recent storms?
He did. Well, I think the island is actually there. I think it was the stuff on the top of it. Yeah.
So. Oh, I thought you were talking about the money. There's been a from fraud, isn't there, been going about people not pretend to be Richard Branson?
Oh, right. I know we just had one storm hit the UK, haven't we? Kind of really battered Ireland.
Ophelia. Ex-Ophelia.
Yeah. But there's another one coming this weekend.
Is there?
Yes.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the reports. Yeah. And it is due to hit us here in the southwest.
It's a lovely sun.
Tomorrow.
Gusts up to about 70, they reckon. So. Yeah.
Battle down the hatches.
So that means the M48 will be shut. So, yeah. So listen out to your traffic reports.
Don't they also, it's not just the M48. Technically, it's the M4 as well, isn't it? Because they do close the other bridge.
No, the M4 isn't ever shut because it's built to take traffic in high winds. It's got deflectors, whereas the first crossing, which was the M4, is now the M48, hasn't got that, so it has to close. Thank you, Mrs. Engineer over there.
They've got little baffles next to the columns, and that's it.
But they close it to high sided vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Haven't you seen that? When you've crossed it, haven't you seen the baffles?
Those big green things, big green deflectors. So
that's because your passport's out of date.
Yeah, so this sends the wind higher over the vehicle than it would, so it doesn't go inside the vehicle. So
that's really clever. They actually thought about it. I suppose when the first bridge was built, though, we didn't really have motor cars. Like we do,
how much do you think it is?
I have no idea.
They built it for cars to go across.
Oh, did
they? Horses.
Oh, right.
Hold on, no. Bridges started with somebody putting a log across the river. That's where it started, and then we went to Stone.
The Clifton Suspension Bridge.
How
wasn't
many
built
people
for cars.
Can remember Ost Ferry?
Ost Ferry.
Oh,
is that the one that was on a chain?
It used to take about four cars at a time.
I've been on a photography day out and photographed the old bits of what's left
the
of the jetty.
The old pier is still there. Yeah.
Well, there's not really much left of it now, to be fair.
No. Yeah. But the approach road's still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was how you got to Wales.
It's fascinating. We went down because we wanted to shoot the sunset as it went down over the new bridge. Fascinating day out.
And this is LGBT plus related because?
Because it was me doing the photographs.
Oh, and sometimes there's rainbows over the channel.
Yeah. It was a lovely rainbow as the sun went down.
And you get loads of fossils at the bottom of the cliffs there as well.
Yeah, which are probably LGBT related.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah,
so
yeah,
there
some
you
of those
go.
Fossils.
I think we saved that segment.
Yes. So I could be really rude. No, I won't. No. I love you too much.
You usually are.
Well, I was going to say, talking of old fossils.
There you go. See, that's the Andy
Brilliant I love. Segues.
Yes. It'd be hashtag, I can't believe Andy said that.
So come on then, you are fossil. What have you got for us?
It's actually National Hate Crime Awareness Week.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. A future show, we couldn't get them in, but the police are coming in very soon. I can't remember if it's next week or the first show of November.
Right.
No, it's not next week because we've got the Black History Month continuation, so it'd be the one after.
I know they have been in before, actually.
Yes. It's a special event, so those of you listening on Froome FM and Glastonbury FM, this will be of interest because it's at Weston Supermare. It's aimed for the whole of North Somerset, and it's on tomorrow. So apologies if you're listening to BASE and BSR. It's at the Healthy Living Centre between 2 and 4:30, and Aidan Somerset Police will be there. It's over a chat over tea and biscuits. See, that's such an attraction when you say tea and biscuits are involved. It's tell us what you love about your neighbourhood. Show there's no place for hate in North Somerset whatsoever. And of course, Weston Supermare Pride are heavily involved in this. The hashtag for that is NHCAW. And there's a notification out. We want you. Mainly men are wanted.
Oh?
Yeah.
What you for? What
have
for?
You noticed that? You know, Andy woke up then.
You're not allowed to do personal adverts here, Steph.
Really?
That really threw it.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking, which way do I swing? But I thought, whatever. Yeah. Just bring it on.
Like I said, you're not allowed to do personal adverts.
Okay. I'll try and swing it a different way then. We got the Bristol Musical Comedy Club. And apologies, Mr. Dunscombe, if you are listening, for Andy's comment. I know how sensitive Ian is. They're going to be doing Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Yes, the musical is hitting Bristol. But next May, that's the 8th to the 12th. But before that, they need you. They need men. They need people to join BMCC. All you need to do is contact new members at bmccproductions.com. That's new members at bmccproductions.com. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
And what are they
going to be doing on stage?
Sorry?
It's brilliant.
And what are they going to be doing?
I presume they need more men in the group. Yeah.
Oh, right.
If Ian, you're listening, you need to text Andy and tell him why you need so many men.
It's ironic. It's a common thing. I mean, I used to be part of Lovers and Musicals.
Oh, right.
I'm guessing men was hard.
Hard.
Yeah. Oh,
too shy.
I just guess worse.
They're just too shy.
I don't know. I don't know. I suppose it could be that. But yeah, there was always about three times as many women as there were men, and I was down
such
there for
a disappointment
more than
10
years.
For you.
Not for you. But anyway. So are we done? Is that
yes,
it?
Yes, thank you.
You sure? No, no more.
Do you want me to sing something?
No more ads.
La 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 la. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could do a jingle.
No, I think that's enough right. For that.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't play the European version of that. Steph is like, is this the European version? Or it's a bit ruder more than anything.
Would
so that's the British version.
Oh.
The radio edit that is safe to play.
Substantially shorter then as well.
It's 2 minutes, 13 seconds.
Yeah, so half has been cut out.
Yeah. So that's Local People Anywhere by Sack Noel. So I haven't played that one in ages.
That sounded really good.
Yeah. So anyway, today on the show, we're talking about something that's a bit close to my heart as well, and that is the subject of adoption. And joining us in the studio is Frances. Hello.
Hello.
Shout out.
Hi.
Hello. Now, you're from the CCS Adoption.
Yeah.
Was it agency?
Yeah, CCS Adoption Agency, yeah.
Do you want to give us a bit of background? Because there's lots of different people involved in helping with adoption, like, isn't there? But what's different with CCS?
So we're an independent adoption agency, so we recruit and assess people who want to become adoptive parents. So yeah, anyone out there who's thinking they might be interested in becoming an adopter, they can get in touch with us, find out more about it.
Cool. Now, the reason I mentioned that I'm because you're quite happy to talk about this as well, aren't you? I mean, both myself and Tara are both adopted. So it's I mean, 39 years ago, it's a little bit different these days. But I don't know what your feeling is on it, but we were talking outside the studio about it. And, of course, one of the myths that's still kind of floating around is if you're LGB or T, it's going to be an awful lot more difficult and a lot harder work and all the stigma and that's still there and the like. But when we were talking, you said that's very much not the case these days.
No, it really has changed. So yeah, I'd welcome anybody to get in touch with us, really. It's very different now. Anybody is welcome, whether you're lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, you're really welcome to get in touch. So as you say, it is a myth that these people won't be welcome to get in touch and find out about adoption.
So it's something you've done yourself, isn't it? So, how many years ago was it? Was it you?
It was 3 years ago that our children arrived with us. So yeah, I work for CCS Adoption, but I'm also an adoptive parent. So I'm an adoption advisor there. So yeah, me and my girlfriend adopted our twins 3 years ago.
Aww.
And yeah, we didn't find that there was any barrier from our sexuality with us becoming adoptive parents.
So I was going to ask, can you talk us through kind of what happens, because I mean a lot of people don't have any idea, I other than contacting the agency, I would imagine they have no clue what then happens from that point on. So
the first step really is to start finding out about adoption, so you can get in touch with CCS Adoption or any other agency or local authority as well, and we have a drop-in information event, so that's the first step really, is to come and find out about how it all works and the kinds of children that are waiting for adoption now, because it's obviously very different than it was a generation ago. When you were adopted, all the children pretty much that are coming to adoption have been taken into care and have usually experienced trauma and neglect and abuse, and at the very least they'll have experienced loss of their birth family. So yeah, we need to explain that to people, and people find out a bit more about the kinds of children that are waiting. So that's right. the first stage.
And you help them understand what that process and how to get involved with the children when they've been through trauma?
Yeah. Becoming adoptive parent is about learning to parent in a different way from the way most people would parent their birth children. As you say, yeah, you have to learn about the way to parent children who have experienced this trauma and loss in their lives, and we talk a lot about therapeutic parenting. So people can come to a drop-in information evening and find out more about adoption, and then after that I can tell you more about the process of how.
Once you decide that you might be the kind of parent or parents that want to adopt, or you know, whatever your situation may be, what's the next stage then? Because everyone thinks that like you're going to have to go through a whole like rigmarole of being grilled to see if you're the right person and have your house inspected and the like that kind of thing. Is that a total myth, or is there?
I think it's a myth that it's a very long process. It did used to be a lot longer, and it has all been streamlined a lot more now, but it is a really rigorous process, because obviously it's about finding families forever for children who've already experienced a lot of trauma and loss, so we've got to get that right. So I think when you look at it from that point of view, it makes sense that it's a very rigorous process. The first stage is for people to apply, and then they will enter stage one of the assessment process, which is now just 2 months, so that's all a lot of checks and having interviews with social workers where they find out more about you and what you have to offer. And then after that, stage two.
So I presume that stage, though, is to ensure you're the kind of person that could cope with...
Yeah,
looking after kids that may you know, have come from troubled backgrounds and that kind of stuff.
And yeah, it's about getting references from friends and family, and obviously things like a police check, and also just looking into your background and what's made you who you are. That's the first stage.
And you were saying that earlier outside about the sizes, so it's not just one child normally, it could be multiple children that are looking for the feather.
Yeah, and it's National Adoption Week this week, and the focus of National Adoption Week this year is all about finding homes for siblings, because yes, as you say, most children waiting, actually the majority, are waiting with a brother or sister, whereas actually a lot of people who are considering adoption usually think that they'll adopt one child. So we're trying to make people aware of that, really. So yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
I guess
that.
They really don't want to split them up. No, you know, if you've
and siblings, you said that LGBT families are more inclined to actually fulfil that role.
Yeah, it does seem to be a trend that a lot of LGBT people are willing to look at siblings and other children who, for whatever reason, might find it harder to find an adoptive family. A lot of LGBT people tend to be quite open-minded about the way their family will look, which is great. And yeah, we took on two children at once, and one of our children has a lot of health problems, and I think I'm a big advocate for the children that are waiting, such as siblings waiting together, or children with disabilities who might otherwise wait longer in care. Yeah.
So what kind of advice do the parents get then? Because when you go to adopt, you may not think through the kind of, you know, the aspects of looking after kids that, firstly, you know, may have a sibling or may have disabilities or the like. That comes as a bit of a shock to some of the parents that have gone forward.
Yeah, I think there are still myths out there that adoption is how it used to be, which was often kind of one relinquished baby that was very young. And so, yeah, it can be surprising to people when they come along to these first drop-in events that is the picture of adoption these days, that it's often siblings and children who are older. So the majority of children that we place for adoption are age 1 to 4, but some children are older than that as well. People do need to they'll have a thorough assessment. So as I said, there's the stage one is 2 months, and then stage two is 4 months. And during that process, that's all about meeting with a social worker, being assessed as adopters. Looking into your family background and the way you might parent, and if you're a couple, into your relationship, and also undertaking training, which adopters come along to talk on that training about their experiences.
Marvellous. So you could get to meet other people who've already been there like yourself and done it. And that kind
of
thing.
Which I think is really useful for people to just get those practical tips of how people have coped.
And you help beyond the adoption as well, as I understand.
Yes, definitely, and that's something CCS Adoption really prides itself in, is the post-adoption support, because obviously... as you've understood, it's a big deal to take on, particularly more than one child who've experienced trauma and loss. The relationship with the adopters and their social worker carries on after the children are placed. So there's always a social worker there to turn to for help. And
that's great. Mm. Yeah, because I mean, obviously, I haven't been through the process. Mm-hmm. Well, I have, but from the other side.
Yeah.
I would imagine it can be quite scary when you've gone through that and it's all happening, and all of a sudden you get I don't know if it's the same as it was. I know from talking to my parents, you know, they were waiting for ages, and they were literally about to go on holiday in like a couple of days' time, and they got a phone call saying there's a baby boy here for you, and they had to cancel the holiday.
Yeah.
And go, and they picked me up. I don't know if it's quite that sudden these days.
It's not usually so sudden, but it can be pretty quick. And I mean, even for us, it was a couple of months from finding out about our children until they moved in. That's still quite quick, I guess, compared to compared to people who have birth children when it's 9 months.
Did you find it quite daunting though, the first night where you suddenly went from not having kids to having kids?
Absolutely.
I mean, were you prepared for it? Is there anything that you guys do to help people prepare for it?
Yeah, or? I mean, I think it is great going through the adoption process, because you do get the chance to really reflect and think about the kind of parent you'll be. And yeah, doing training where you're thinking about the needs of those children, it's really valuable for when it then happens. I think the other thing is we really advise people to get a lot of childcare experience if they can before they adopt. And that's something you sort of discuss with your social worker as you're going through the assessment, your sort of experience of looking after children. But yeah, nothing can really prepare you for going from having no children to suddenly having two children asleep upstairs. It is, yeah, definitely quite a shock.
It's not a gradual introduction then, is it?
It is a gradual introduction. There is an introduction period where... So for us, we were visiting our children when they were still in foster care, and we were gradually spending more and more time with them over, for us, it was about a 10-day period.
That's quite intense.
It is a really intense experience, and it's obviously amazing. You know, you're meeting your children, and we absolutely loved it. Meeting them for the first time, and
you see, that was what I was going to ask, because we've talked, and it sounds like it's a lot better than it used to be, but it still sounds like quite a big process to go through.
Yeah,
but it's got to be safety first.
I know,
there,
yeah.
I think that's really important.
No, I totally agree. But what I was going to ask is, you know, how rewarding have you found it now you've been through it and you've got 2 kids?
Yeah, I mean, more rewarding than I can even explain. They're just everything to us. And I think it's made it even more amazing that they are adopted, and we know the background they've come from. And I think it's even more amazing when you can see the progress children have made, and you see the difference you've made to their lives. And it's been absolutely brilliant, and I just love them much. And I think for me, it hasn't them being adopted, they just feel 100% mine, and
So how are you working with them to, I assume, I don't know what age they are, but in terms of as they grow up, their history, how is that going to be evolved?
We always talk to them about their life story, and that's something that at CCS Adoption, social workers sort of work with people to about how to talk to children about their life story. And it is very different from the way it used to be. Probably the era you were both adopted in,
it was all lies.
It was
quite literally fabricated.
I mean my parents were always very open and honest.
My parents were told the story from the social workers, but it was complete fabrication, because when I discovered my birth parent and talked to her, it was a completely different story.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, you see, because I actually had letters and sorts.
Oh, no, I was saying, it's quite shocked at how deceitful it was.
I think it's really important for children to know as much as they can about where they've come from and the reasons that they were taken into care and placed for adoption.
I'm very glad I was told, because it is one of those things I think could be catastrophic to hit. I have had other friends who've hit 18 and suddenly found out that they were adopted, and that just, it totally destroyed their life, you know, whereas I've known from day one. The best way to do that.
I knew, and I think the other thing I always thought was that actually my parents wanted me. And that was the biggest thing. There was no accidental part of it. Yeah. It was actually, you know, they went out because they wanted to love a child.
Anyway, if people want to find out more, you've got some events coming up, haven't you?
So I just want to really say to all LGBT people out there, you know, that you really can find out about adoption, and please do get in touch. So look at our website, ccsadoption.org, and we've got an event specifically for LGBT people on Saturday the 4th of November from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. So that's a drop-in information event, so anybody's welcome to come along. If you'd like to let us know you're coming, that's great, or just turn up on the day. We'd love to meet people and tell you more about adoption.
And is that at your offices?
Yep, that's at CCS Adoption. Yeah, in Easton. Cool. You can look at our website.
Well, listen, it's been lovely talking to you. And I hope it spurs a few more people on to adopt, because I know that the ratio is a lot better now, but there's still kids that are out there that need adopting, aren't there? So best of luck with it, and we hope the event goes well. We must make sure we get it listed on our website so people can go find it as well. And best of luck with your two.
Yep, thank you for having us on.
And we'll have to catch up with you again sometime soon. So, anyway, stay with us. News headlines coming up next. You're listening to Shout Out.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Are you with me? Are you with me?
That's Are You With Me by Lost Frequencies.
No, you're still here.
Huh? You know what?
You're still here.
I'm still here.
Yeah.
We haven't lost our
right,
frequency.
Sorry, I'm with you. Yeah. Sorry, I've been a bit slow. I was thinking adoption, that's why. So I thought that was fascinating.
It's lovely to see it's different from...
Yeah, and lovely to... And talking to her off air as well, she's absolutely elated about being a mum and having kids. Absolutely. It's really, really nice. So, anyway, hello, Mitch and Terry.
How are you doing?
We're good. So I think we're catching up with one of your friends in a bit, aren't we, Mitch?
Yes, yeah, so. We've got... Linda Devo in the studio, and we've got her on an extra as well. So, yeah,
but
we'll
have a little chat there. First off, I'd be very grateful if we could get some news headlines.
More than welcome.
Okay. This is Shout Out News on Thursday, the 19th of October.
Armistead Maupin, the originator of the Tales of the City sequence of books, which charts the progress of a group of diverse friends from San Francisco from the rainbow-hued 70s to the present day, has given a series of interviews ahead of the publication of his memoirs. Mr. Maupin looks back on a life intertwined with the queer communities of the Bay Area for the last 40-odd years, and he's on the recommended reading list by many booksellers, including Gaze the Word, News from Nowhere, and Foils. He is interviewed in depth in the current issue of the gay magazine Wink, which retails for £6 at newsagents.
Cultural and Arts Monthly Crack magazine, which is partly published in Bristol, meets the Discwoman Collective in its new issue out now. Discwoman work with women, transgender people, queer folk and people of colour to put on events in New York City, to promote music and to help distribute the local acts. Discwoman have a strict ethical policy and have shown that it's possible to make good records and put on popular dance music events while still trading with dignity. You can pick up copies of Crack magazine free of charge at cultural centres across the Shoutout region.
LGBT people are increasingly being targeted by religious campaigns which seek to give fundamentalists the right to refuse them services. Well, that cuts both ways, and now Ben Borgman, the owner of the Bedlam coffee shop in Seattle, has made a stand after he found a group of religious extremists in his store enjoying coffee but carrying stacks of leaflets they had been giving out in the city, which contained graphic scenes of abortion and vicious denunciations of homosexuality, which it compared to the Nazi Holocaust. Mr. Borgman told the extremists to leave and said that he was exercising his freedom of conscience to refuse them service. Well, you can visit our website for a link up to the Pink News article on the case, but please note that the hate group's leaflet is reproduced there and does include graphic images of aborted fetuses.
Our colleagues at Southwest London's community radio station, Radio Jackie, report that Epsom Playhouse in their catchment area plays a host to a production of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, from 24th to 28th of October. The famous drag-themed hit musical will be closely based on the film from 1994. Visit epsomplayhouse.co.uk for information and booking.
The Daily Mirror reports this week on a documentary screened on Monday night on Channel 4, which features the last interviews given by the late George Michael. In it, the gay singer spoke openly about some of his most painful moments, including a five-year low during which he lost his lover to an AIDS-related condition and he lost his mother. Mr. Michael died last Christmas at the age of 53, but his legacy lives on with huge hit singles and his philanthropic work. It emerged after his death that he had given the majority of his fortune away to charities.
And Mark Ullman spoke to the Bristol Post at the weekend. The former Soft Cell singer was in the city to promote his new album and perform some standards from his 35-year career in music. A sanguine Mark said that he doubted he would still be alive in 10 years, as he's already cheated death on several occasions. Mark's new album, called Shadows and Reflections, is out now.
For these news stories and more from the LGBT universe, you can check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Mitchy Mitchy Moo Moo
and Terry Starr.
Shout
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
I quite like that one. Yeah, you can be there.
You can be there.
Well, funny. That's Avicii and Addicted to You. So I like Avicii. I'm a real Avicii fan.
Yeah, you play a lot of Avicii, don't you?
I haven't actually.
I do like them actually.
Haven't actually for weeks. So, but yeah, no, that's quite a cool one. Do you like Avicii?
Yeah. My music taste is changing with the with you. You hold that impact.
It's becoming eclectic, Tara.
Laura
doesn't like my taste in music.
Well, I got a lot of rock. And
well, that's because she's young and trendy.
Anyway, Mitch, you ought really to introduce this one because Linda's here in the studio with us. Hello, Linda.
Hello. I don't know your name, but hello.
I'm Andy.
Hello,
this
Andy.
Is Tara.
Hi, Tara.
Hello.
But you two have been chatting a bit before the show, haven't you?
Yeah. I had a little conversation with Linda, you know, really because I wanted to have some voices from some people of colour who were identified as queer and,
By the way, it's cutie pop, isn't it?
Cutie pop.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so. Cutie pop folk. I wanted to capture some voices and I spoke to Linda.
Cool. We'll talk to Linda a bit more in a second, but have a listen to this.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Linda?
My name's Linda Devo. I am 47 years old. I've lived in Bristol for 5 years. I teach for my day job. I teach design and art and construction. And I am a furniture maker by trade. And I live with my mother, who's 83.
So, as you know, October's Black History Month. We know there's a lack of visibility in Bristol.
Yeah.
It's such a multicultural city.
Mm.
It's quite surprising that the lack of reflecting the different communities for LGBT plus people. Mm. So can I ask you, what are your experiences of being a queer, trans or intersex person of colour?
What, in Bristol specifically?
Yeah, Bristol, perhaps on the scene in Bristol, the LGBT plus scene.
So I am a Londoner. I lived in London since I was 12 till 42, and I used to go out a lot, and obviously London is also very diverse. I was very spoilt by that, you know, as in I expected that to be the case. When I came to look at Bristol 7 years ago, so 2 years before I moved, no, 4 years before I moved here, I started looking at Bristol, and the thing that struck me first was how segregated the city was. It's changed now, but I found the city really segregated socially anyway. So you have Somalians living in Barton Hill and the rich people in Clifton and, you know, mostly white people in Redland and Cottam, you know, so I found it really segregated. 4 years after I came and looked, I went into the Plough.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Plough was everybody from everywhere on the planet, which was really great. And so I thought, the Plough's in Eastern, at the time owned by some Asian men. So I think that maybe made it very inclusive. Because of the age I am, I suppose I stopped going out on the scene, but there was a scene to be going out onto, and I DJ, and I love music, and I like going out and dancing. So I did go and have a look at I got taken to the Pineapple when I first started nosing around Bristol, and it was very white. There were no black people at all visible. Like, I didn't see any. But then I thought, well, the whole of the city is segregated, so no surprises. And then obviously having moved here and getting involved in nosing around and seeing what sort of scene there is. Like, I don't like sort of poppy music particularly. I wouldn't necessarily go out to a place where there's lots of pop music playing. Though I like to go out for the community, so I might have gone to places like the Queen's Shilling. I discovered that it's really, there's a serious lack of colour.
Yes.
On the scene.
Yes.
And I asked my girlfriend, where are all the black women and where are all the black men? Where are all the people of colour? And she named a couple of people to me that she knew personally. But it seems like everyone's either run away to London or another city or are very closeted or just hang out in their community.
Yeah.
In their local pub or something and don't come out of the closet.
No. Okay.
Because there's sort of cultural stuff going on, I think, as well.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. I wondered if you'd experienced any kind of racism that you might have been able to identify particularly.
Not overtly on the scene. I did have people looking at me, you know, because I'm a Londoner and I, you know, no one bats an eyelid when I bounce about the place. When I got here, I did exactly the same. I walked into shops in Clifton and I'd see people do a double take. Maybe there aren't that many, at the time, there weren't that many black people wandering in and out of shops in Clifton. Yeah, I wasn't, you know, I went to Wild Oats and got a funny look and went into Neil's Yard and got a funny look. I presumed that was because...
Is that where you lived in, when you first...
No. I moved to Eastville because my street has got everybody in it. Again, yeah. It's very diverse and... yeah, so that's where we live. Because I was talking, interesting, I was talking to a black woman who's a lesbian the other day about this and how, you know, there's a sort of body confidence, I think, that dykes have, where we take up space in a way that maybe heterosexual women don't,
mm-hmm.
mostly. And yeah. I've met the odd one that does, but mostly don't. So I think maybe the way I sort of walk into a place or the way I... command attention or whatever it is, maybe people read that and think I'm gay. But she was saying that she notices that people, you know, like people in the community or in her community where she lives, you know, she gets funny looks, she gets looked at a lot. But then her partner, who's white, also gets looked at a lot because she's quite tall and again takes up her space. So I think there's something about the way lesbians walk
oh,
or drive or whatever.
Yeah. I hope I've got a lesbian walk. You also happen to be a practicing Buddhist. Explain how that works, at being a lesbian and being a Buddhist.
Okay, so I started practicing Buddhism when I was 19. I met someone who chanted. I practiced Nichiren Buddhism, so in the process of that is to chant daily and meet with your fellow Buddhists and discuss daily life in the context of being a practicing Buddhist and how one uses that to guide our actions and etc. And the woman who introduced me to Buddhism was a black American lesbian poet. Right away I knew that I'd be accepted as, you know, I'd be celebrated for who I was, and Buddhist, in a Buddhist philosophy and in our organisation, the Soka Gakkai, we've got there's a principle of treasuring our differences. So actually acknowledging that we are all unique. And that's what makes life so interesting and rich and beautiful. And so we're actively, positively encouraged to be ourselves, whatever that is. And there's no need to kind of try and conform to some ideal of what is a Buddhist. There is no such thing. There is no transcending reality to become some sort of Buddha in a floating cloud up a mountain somewhere away. We can all do that. We can all be a Buddha when we're away from people. So it's very much about being in community. What's the best self I can be, whatever circumstances I'm in, whether that's in my family or my neighbours or my work, diddly. So it's all about congruence. Buddhism for me is all about who are you and being absolutely all the way down the middle yourself, with Nam-myoho Renge Kyo down your centre, to the best qualities of all of yourself, to, you know, so even when you're angry, you can still express Buddhahood, which is courage, compassion and wisdom. So it just completely makes sense. There's like no disparities anywhere. It all fits. It all, yeah.
And have you always been a spiritual person?
I was brought up in a Christian household and I went to a school. I grew up in Ghana, which is a West African country, which is very Christian. And it's got a lot of Muslim people as well, but it's mostly predominantly Christian because of the colonial thing. I went to boarding school when I was 10. I went to the Catholic bit of the church because my parents were Presbyterian and Methodist, but I went to the Catholic bit because I liked all the dirges and the waving of incense and all the sort of ritual.
That ritual.
Weird, yeah. You know, like, yeah, it's all quite, I don't know, it's quite, now I'd say it's quite camp, actually. And that's probably what I was drawn to, all that drama. But it didn't sit well with me from very, very little. I didn't like the concept of some God out there who was looking at me and judging me and judging. I didn't like any of it, and it didn't make sense because I saw people being bad and they seemed to get away with it, but when I was bad I got caught by my parents. You know what I mean? So, like, the loads of things didn't sit well. And then of course, you know, as quite young I was aware that I didn't quite fit somehow in whatever the thing is that I was supposed to be. I wasn't it. I was up a tree all the time. I'm not saying that being a lesbian means you're a tomboy necessarily, but I was. I want to wear dresses.
I join you in that. I
didn't want to do anything that, kind of that was expected to do. They got me dolls and I broke them. Yeah, so they stopped buying me dolls and I just got to read books. I didn't. So it wasn't right. So I'm not explaining myself very well. You know what I mean? Like, everyone around me was black, but I was brown, and it turns out I was adopted, but I didn't find out until way down the line. And so, but I was growing up in a black, predominantly black country, so there weren't many reflections of myself in any way around me. Like, all my cousins were all wearing dresses. I didn't want to wear a dress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just didn't fit.
Yeah.
So, of course, the whole thing about God, and I knew quite young that I, you know, was probably, I like girls, I like boys too, but I like girls, you know, in a way that I wasn't interested in boys. When I knew this, but then I somehow picked up that it was wrong to be a lesbian. I knew that somehow.
Someone told you it was wrong to
obviously
be a lesbian.
Yeah, and then when I did come out, I didn't tell my mum for ages, you know. I just did my business and didn't tell her anything, you know, just evolved. There was all this kind of horrible stuff from Christianity, all very judgmental and, you know, good and evil and everything so very black and white, and it just didn't sit well with me. So yeah, those were my experiences of spirituality before, and I knew it wasn't right, it didn't fit, so I tried to find my own way of being, you know, because I'm quite an optimistic person and I really love nature and all of those things, and seeing the good in people and all of those things were positives. And then I met this woman, Linda King, who told me about Buddhism. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I've been trying to live like, and there's a practice that goes with it. And she taught me how to chant, and I immediately was like, yes, great. But I didn't really want to hang out with any Buddhists, so I had some ideas about what a Buddhist was like, because it's a hope-filled religion. It's always about hope. It's about hope, and because hope is hugely transformative and makes us bother to do things. If we didn't have any, we wouldn't bother to even live.
Yeah, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
I'm liking this. They're all bopping along in the studio here.
Yeah, so Barbara Streisand.
Going to have to hunt that one out.
I like that one.
Yeah, it's Barbara Streisand as well. I think that's for copyright reasons. That's by Duck Sauce Sound.
Really good.
Duck Sauce.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, hello, Linda. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm recovered from the rain.
Yeah, it's been quite naff out there recently, hasn't it?
Today has been hideous.
A little bit plowery for you there, naff.
Yes, naff.
Do you remember from our plowery show?
Oh, we did too, I was bona fide to see your Eureka again. What are you doing trolling around here?
I forgot you lovely were really
lallies.
Good at it.
Got lovely lallies on your bicycle. I think there is a Polaris for bicycle, but I don't know.
So lallies is legs, I remember that.
Martin will know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Linda. Mm-hmm. Linda, we just heard from you about your kind of stuff, but what we would like to find out is, where are the Cutipoc spaces in Bristol?
Well, excitingly, myself and a few of my fellows have started a night. We've had one go at it last month without a huge amount of advertising. We had about 40 people turn up, several of them quite young, and lots of really lovely dancing went on.
Is this the Kiki that we're talking about?
This is Kiki. So we're going to start. We've started this night called Kiki, and at the moment it's going to be once a month, and it's in Clifton, and it's at the moment free, because we're testing the waters. And it's got three sections where people can come along with something to eat and share, and we all sit and have a chin wag with our friends and meet new people, etc. And then we have an open mic if anyone wants to do some performance and entertain us or talk about something relevant that they might want to have a conversation about. And then we do dancing till 12 o'clock.
Cool. And what kind of things did you get? Did you get me on the open mic this time?
Pardon me?
Did you get many
we
people
didn't
on the
first
open
time
mic?
Around because it was the first time we hadn't advertised it.
You
as
didn't
such.
Get up and lead the way then.
No, I was busy playing music because I was mostly doing the DJing.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yes. Yeah. I should have read that. That is on the show notes that you were DJing.
Yes, I was DJing, and we have a music policy of sort of Afrobeat and some, you know, good dance music, music of black origin, and so it was a really successful night. We're having another one next week.
Marvellous. So did you say whereabouts in Clifton?
Well, we can't exactly say, so if anyone wants to come, they'll have to email letshaveakiki100@hotmail.com.
Okay.
Because, you know, because of some people who may come may have issues around privacy, and we have some refugees who come, so we don't want to put anyone in a space where they don't feel safe. So if people want to come, please look at the a Facebook page, as a Kiki, have a Kiki Social Facebook page, as well as the email address, which I shall repeat. It's letshaveakiki100@hotmail.com.
So we'll have to make sure we put that on the website.
Yeah, definitely. And we run basically from 7 o'clock till 12 midnight. And yeah,
that's amazing.
Please come
is
along.
It's Saturday night, is it? You said
it's a Thursday night.
Thursday the 26th.
We're aiming to.
You're
do
allowed
it.
To go after shout out.
Yes.
Well, we can go after shout out. Yes. Well.
So yeah, it's predominantly cutie pop people, but also our friends and allies who are happy to come and hang out with us in our space. And well, you know,
that's fantastic. That's amazing. Get 40 on the first event. That's,
yeah, thereabouts. Maybe 30 something. I'm not very good at counting, but it was.
Yeah, always count more. Always count more.
But you know, without any advertising, very little, and we didn't advertise at all, actually. It was mostly people just telling their friends, a few friends, so yeah.
Yeah, we put it out on shout out, but obviously that was kind of, you know, on the out shout that we have as
that's
well.
That's great, thank you very much.
That's right. Yeah. It's nice to hear these new things coming around. So, because I mean, I don't know if you heard it last week. We were talking to Lara about stuff, and they were going on about, you know, cutie pop people and people of colour needing their own space and the like. So it's really cool to hear that there are actually things in Bristol. This is what I love about Bristol. If something's not going on, someone usually gets up and does something about it, as opposed to just sitting there and going, "Oh, well, there's nothing for me." You know, it's really, really cool to hear.
Yeah,
so.
It's a very inspiring city like that. There's so much going on. There's obviously the feeling that one can as well set up and do something.
I do love it's it really when you see all the things come out and they're like voted best city to live in and most cultural and all those kind of things. It makes you really proud to be Bristolian, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's quite a vibrant city, and certainly for music and arts and entertainment and things. So
a lot of blooming roadworks at the moment. I'd be glad when they finish all that.
Quite absolutely.
It's a pretty accepting city.
It is Black History Month at the moment. Have you been doing much for that? Or?
There's so much going on. Such conflict. What shall I do next? There's so much.
If you had to pick one that's coming up, what would you recommend?
There's no Black in the Union Jack is the next thing I'm going to.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there's also Grace Jones' Bloodlight and Bammy showing at the Watershed. And if you go on a Wednesday night, which unfortunately was it Wednesday night and the Friday night next week, have lots going on. Director chats and people
Q&A's
phone calls and all sorts
of
things.
It's great. They often get the directors or someone that's written it in or something like that. That's really cool.
Which is such a really good element, because then you can ask questions and find out more.
Yeah.
And I went to a great event. Come the Revolution put on a brilliant event at the Arnolfini last week, which was really moving. And so I really hope they put that out again, because I think more people need to see it. It was great. Cool. It's called Woman.
Women.
But W-O in brackets. Yeah.
So I think we're carrying on talking about Black History Month next week as well through memory on the show. So you will have to join us for that. So,
Great.
I hope your next Kiki goes well.
Thank you very much.
You'll have to come back and tell us it's gone up to 400 or something, won't you?
Oh, we need a bigger venue. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. That would be exciting.
Anyway, that's it for today. But as always, if you want to know more about today's show or more about Shout Out, just head over to our home online.
Shout Out Radio LGBT is where you want to go.
Next week, like I said, it's the final in our Black History Month series. But from myself and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye everybody.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.